Bloomberg News on demand. Bloomberg on the Economy with Tom Keane. Wednesday, July 1st, 2009.
Iris Lav, senior advisor to the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities, creator of the State Fiscal Analysis Initiative. There are many Californias, and the trend is in the deficit direction. Also, Lav on taxes. Is it a good idea to raise taxes in a recession? That's a popular idea. Give us the dynamic right now. Last time we talked to you, you predicted essentially everything that has occurred. What's on your mind right now, beginning of the fiscal year 2010? What's the trend?
Well, at the beginning of this fiscal year, today, there are 8 states that still don't have full 2010 budget agreements for fiscal year 2010 and are still negotiating or bouncing a budget back and forth because of vetoes or some things like that. Now, most of them will manage to continue operating for a few more days at least, but it's a very difficult year. It's an unusual number of states that are not finished by now. Everybody's having a very hard time. In addition, there are a dozen states that did finish their budget on time and put it into effect a month ago or more, and 12 of those budgets have fallen out of balance again. So every time the states look, their revenue forecasts are wrong. Revenues are coming in weaker than expected. And we can expect this entire fiscal year 2010 to be an incredibly difficult one.
Well, that was my headline question for next, is we saw that 20% decline in tax receipts, I believe, out of the Rockefeller Foundation up in Albany. What is the trend now? Do we look for a 30% decline in tax receipts as we go into the second half of this calendar year?
Right. Rockefeller had about a 25% decline in personal income tax revenue. Sales tax is down. It's not down that quite that much for the first 4 months of this year. And I think that we're not finished with revenue drops. As far as I know, nobody knows when this recession is going to be over. It's not over yet, for sure. And no one has that crystal ball to know when it will be over. And as long as we're still in this recession, we're going to have very weak consumption, and that's going to hurt sales tax revenue. We're now at 9.4% unemployment. The forecasts are for it going up to 10% or beyond. You know, in the last recession, it peaked at 6.3%.
Well,
that's a big difference.
If we assume the good news of only a 10% decline in money coming into state governments, what is the historic number that they cut spending on? Do they cut spending by 3%? Do they cut spending by 8%? Or can they go out to 12 or 13% if there's a 10% revenue shortfall?
Well, it depends. I mean, cutting spending certainly is not the only solution. And what we have now, luckily, is the federal stimulus dollars closing between 30 and 40% of state budget
well,
gap.
Well, you talked up the idea of the federal government saving the day on 30%. Do we just assume that the Obama cash machine will save the day here out into 2011 and 2012?
No, we can't assume that. So the federal stimulus is closing about 30 to 40% of these huge gaps that states have. States are missing about a quarter of their revenue, so that's really important. But the federal stimulus, certainly the Medicaid part of it, which is the largest part of it, ends on December 31st, 2010. And in early 2011, the education part of it ends. We are looking at state fiscal distress extending to 2011. We're showing for state fiscal year 2011 about $180 billion in new deficits and maybe $120 billion for 2012. And the stimulus does not extend out that far, So that's a matter of concern right now. But at the moment, the stimulus is in a large part, if not fully saving the day, at least it's mitigating the need for these terrible budget cuts. And states are raising revenues as well to try and mitigate the budget
cuts.
Well,
let's talk about that, and particularly with your decades of work looking back at past crises, maybe not at this level, and we mentioned the tax receipt shortfall. Is there an appetite to raise taxes at the state level? Isn't that not a positive the first Tuesday of November?
It is a difficult thing to do at the state or the federal level to raise taxes. But increasingly, states are beginning to realize that it's the better thing to do for their economies. States are beginning to realize that if they cut this, if they cut jobs, for example, which over 40 of them are doing, they're either cutting jobs or giving furloughs. Those people don't have money to spend in the economy, and that just pulls the economy down further. And so tax increases take money from people, too, but some of it comes from savings, particularly if it's from higher-income people. So actually, there are about 28 states that have already raised taxes this year. And some of the various kinds of taxes, some large, some small, but there are some very significant taxes increases, including income tax increases on high-income people, which is what the economists tell you is the right thing to do.
Well, when you do that, and there's different opinions on this, to say the least, but I would say most of my listeners have an understanding that the federal government takes, well, it was 20% and now it's 18%. How much do the state governments take as a general statement, and how much is that within an historical context?
Well, if you look at as a percent of income, something like that, state and local governments, which include property taxes, local
okay,
money for education and so forth,
yeah,
you know, are in the 9 or 10% range, something like that.
So they're taking 9 or 10%. And how does that compare with, say, 20 years ago or 40 years ago?
Well, state and local governments have a lot more responsibilities than they did 20 years ago or 40 years ago, particularly. You know, Medicaid didn't exist in the 1960s, yet states spend, you know, about 18% of their budgets on Medicaid. They did provide education, but our standards for what education is have risen substantially as people's incomes have risen. They expect more. There are lots of other functions that states just didn't used to provide, and people have demanded, you know, more government, just as they've demanded smaller class sizes, just as they've, you know, demand a higher level of maintenance of roads than they did 40 years ago.
Iris, when you look at these flows, and we'll move on to other topics here in a second, folks, is a given legislature, obviously the stereotype of a Republican state legislature wants to cut spending, and the stereotype of a Democratic legislature, well, maybe they don't want to cut spending that much and they work with tax policy a little more. There are those stereotypes there. What's the number one thing, whatever the political persuasion, that we get wrong about state legislatures? What's the thing that the media and my listeners just typically get wrong? Because, I mean, you're in this knee-deep in whatever the political persuasion. There's so many stereotypes of how we view our state legislatures, aren't there?
I think there are. I think that the biggest thing I think people get wrong is how hard it is. I think
Thank you. You can see that within the news flow.
Right. It is not easy. There is just so many competing pressures. There are some legislators that want to cut spending, but the truth is that one person's waste is another person's essential program, and that is always the case. And so it is indeed very difficult to find things to cut that are not actually harmful, that will not harm our legislators' constituents. And I think both Republicans and Democrats know that, despite the rhetoric that they use. And so it is very difficult, is true, for conservative Democrats and Republicans to vote for tax increases, but they do when the choice is cutting essential services.
How does that choice get made? I mean, is it 2 a.m. where somebody just sits down and says, okay, we can't print money? What's the mechanism of making that tough choice?
I think so. Delaware finished at 4:33 a.m. this morning with a tax increase.
Well, great. This is fantastic. But they finished at 4 a.m.
Right.
What did they accomplish?
They accomplished not having to make as many cuts as they otherwise would have. They had a 17-18% of budget deficit, and what that's not the highest by far in the country, but they raised their gross receipts tax, their corporate tax, and they raised the top rate of their income tax. So they made that decision.
When they make that decision, do businesses leave? I mean, that's the ultimate threat. Oh, they'll move to Pennsylvania, except what's Pennsylvania's budget deficit?
Pennsylvania's budget deficit is about 18% of their budget.
Yeah, what a shock.
And they're,
My point is, they're
not finished yet, but their governor is asking for a tax increase.
So, Iris, just to begin with sort of the cut spending, cut taxes, we hate all state governments view, is the whole political economics of a traditional modern conservatism, has it been just overwhelmed by the size of the crisis?
Well, I think that, first, conservatism is not quite as ideological at the state level as that we're accustomed to hearing at the federal level. The lines, I find, are not as sharp in many state legislatures as they are in Congress, which is, in my opinion, a pretty good thing. But the But I do think that when you have these massive budget deficits, and as I mentioned early, the budget deficits for 2010 were 24% of state budgets. You're missing a quarter of what you need. So that has to be coped with. You know, states have to be realistic. They have balanced budget requirements. So they have to do something. And so the choices are pretty stark. And while ideology plays a role, so does the needs of constituents, and so I think that moderates the ideology more than at the federal level where the budget is a different kind of an animal.
And just to folks, to give you the fabulous detail you see at the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities, Vermont expanded the sales tax to include liquor and digital downloads, raising over $3 million in new revenues in fiscal 2010. When it is conservatives and they're battling against these tides of rapidly declining receipts and tough choices on spending, are they a group of 20 or a given 200 people in a legislative and a lobbyist continuum, or is it three or four men and women in a locked room at 3 a.m.?
There are a few legislatures that are very leadership-driven, but by and large, most are not. Most of them
it's a little
need
messy.
Broader support.
Yeah, it's a little messy. What is it like on a given state's legislative floor as they get down to the nitty-gritty, like Vermont looking for the marginal $3 million. I mean, that's chump change. But what is it actually like when they make the sausage?
It really differs by state. But it is what I think people generally think it is, that as it is at the federal level. There are whips. There are people going around trying to count noses and see where the votes are, and there are compromises, and it is like as legislatures are everywhere, I think, by and large. As I said, there are a few states. I would have said New York, but New York is on meltdown, and there's nothing is true for New York anymore with the Senate unable to function. But like Illinois is a very leadership-driven legislature, and in Illinois, if the Speaker of the Assembly and the President of the Senate don't want it, it doesn't happen. And so that's a part of what's going on right now, why Illinois is in total gridlock about its budget. But in other places, it's far more democratic, and it's what you think, what one might imagine from, the general sense of what legislatures and Congress does.
Which state gets it right? Which state is prudent and measured? All these code words. Is there a trophy Iris Lav state?
No.
Guam?
I would be very hard put to. Indiana is very conservative, but it's certainly a very low service state. And in many ways, it has other issues. And it has distributional issues of who pays for its public services. Maryland often does a decent job.
Iris Lav, let's look at the other side. There are states with a more liberal ethos, I'm going to call it. Maybe these are not the right words. I look at your wonderful detail here, folks. Mississippi raised their cigarette tax from 18 cents to 68 cents a pack. Rhode Island increased it a dollar to $3.46 per pack. Okay, fine. There's a difference across states. How are the states reacting to these challenging times that believe in a fully staffed state government with a lot of spending and are above average in taxes? How are they adapting? The states that are in the upper 10 or 15 of tax burdens, the ones that are different than a more conservative ethos state.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the high service states are attempting as best they can to maintain their high services, but some of those states are having a very hard time. So New York, which is a very high service state, made a number of tax increases, and it was able to, and it used a combination of tax increases and the fiscal stimulus money to mitigate their budget cuts, and although they made budget cuts, they weren't of the kind which are really harmful certainly to vulnerable people in the state. So that's a state which is known for its higher tax burden but high service levels. And it did raise taxes temporarily. A lot of these tax increases are temporary. And they did the same thing in the last recession. They raised taxes temporarily. When the economy recovered, they took off the tax.
Did that work? Did they really take the taxes away?
They did.
And they built up these rainy day funds.
Yes. And the problem with the rainy day funds is most states have rainy day funds in the 5 to 12% of budget range, and it's very hard politically to make them any higher than that. So fiscal year 2009 deficits were about 18% of the budget. Fiscal year 2010 deficits are another 24% of the budget. So the rainy day funds are very useful, particularly in the early days of a recession while states are trying to figure out what to do, but they certainly don't last.
Which is the sacred cow of these high service states? What is the third rail that all liberal legislators say we can't touch that? Is there a certain program or a certain category of program?
There are not this recession. Things that very often states are reluctant to cut K-12 education.
Yes, okay.
I mean, that is the thing that states are most reluctant to cut, but they're doing it. We have a whole long list in our update on budget cuts paper of cuts in K-12 education. In fact, half the states have made such cuts. There aren't so many that are cutting the per pupil spending. A lot of them are trying to cut around the edges, but I think that is not going to last very long.
Iris, you mentioned earlier one of our good listeners, Governor Patterson of the state of New York. He's been kind to the show, appearing with us and certainly conveying to us that he listens often. How big a headache does the governor of the state of New York have?
He has an enormous headache right now.
I hope he's listening right now.
I mean, I assume he has an enormous headache. I don't know that for a fact. But from what he said, right now the Senate of New York is dysfunctional. It is there was an attempted coup d'etat a couple weeks ago with the Republicans turning two members from Democratic to Republican, and then one came back to Democratic. So the legislature, the Senate is divided 50-50. They can't decide who the president of the Senate is, and they cannot, there's no one to lead. There's no one to hold the sessions. There are many bills pending that the Senate really needs to pass, and it can't. So it's quite a headache.
It's quite a headache. It's been, folks in the press, certainly in New York, widely reported. When you look at that, or you look at what's going on in California, I mean, this is not about money. It's not about budgets. May I suggest it's more about just raw politics and what we maybe associate with the 19th century?
I think that's the case potentially in New York. In California, it is very much about money. Everything's about money in California, although it is also about ideology. But California is tied in knots between its supermajority requirement to pass a budget, two-thirds requirement in the legislature, and its many constraints on its budgets and funding streams from all of the initiatives that have been passed over the years since the late 70s and Proposition 13. So the problem, I mean, there is a very ideological legislature, despite what I said earlier about mm-hmm. many legislatures not being as ideological, and they cannot. They did pass a 2010 budget, and then it's massively out of balance again by another $19.5 billion.
Well, help us with the national challenge, frankly, whether it's fiscal or it's maybe some of the social issues. In the media, we sort of drop into a state and look at the silliness of state legislatures. I would suggest that's an unfair analysis. Describe with your decades of experience the quality of our state legislators. I mean, are they really on the game about the nuances of tax receipts and spending? Take us away from the media stereotypes. What do you see within New York or Illinois or Montana or New Mexico's legislatures? What is the makeup of the people?
Well, those different states have very different makeups of their legislatures. You know, New York and California has kind of professional legislators who work all year round and meet every year and who have staffs and are able to do an actual analysis, and committees have staffs and so forth. If you move to some of the smaller states, including Montana, the legislature only meets for, I think it's 90 days once every 2 years, and there is not much staff, and the people tend to have other occupations and do this as sort of a part-time thing. Nevertheless, I think that, so there are very different kinds of people. So someone in the Montana legislature may be a full-time something else, be it a farmer, a car salesman, or a lawyer, which is less common in the larger states.
And now we move, folks, to the cynical portion of your show. Iris Lav, I'm honored to ask you this question with your experience. I can see many of my listeners saying, first, do no harm, and the Montana approach is probably the correct approach. Is there a school of thought at the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities that maybe the best strategy is to only meet for 3 months or whatever it is every 2 years?
No.
I knew that would be the answer.
I think the states face a lot of challenges, and states have over the years, and starting in the probably arguably starting in the 1970s, have been given more and more responsibilities for programs. There are very few federal programs, for example, that are not implemented by the states, that do not have options that the states take or don't take, there are a few that don't have state matching funds, okay, but most of them do. And there are things that states have to do. If you have a kind of a large, a sparsely populated, mostly homogenous state without a lot of poverty, you could probably manage it. But in most states, that's not the case.
When you look at this and these fascinating dynamics, folks, of political economics, you've got to ask the resounding question, are we just going to have fatigue here and exhaustion? How far out is this going to go? When you're around the coffee table with Nicholas Johnson, is this to 2011? Yes, but are you modeling out to 2012 all of this trauma?
Yes, we are. I think I mentioned earlier, we're looking at deficits exceeding $100 billion still in 2012. State fiscal year 2012. We're very worried about how far this goes and when the economy recovers, because we're still in the recession as far as anybody knows. And if you look at the last couple of recessions, the early part of this decade and the one in the 1990s, the main part of fiscal distress occurred after the recession was officially over. And that's because unemployment kept rising. And in this case, the projections are that some people are projecting that unemployment continues to rise, and certainly to 2011 and some through 2011.
Yes, yes.
So we are very worried But it's hard to focus policymakers on anything that far out.
Which tax is most efficient? I mean, should we have a Steve Forbes value-added tax? Do we need a far more progressive system? Which tax has the best math for beleaguered legislatures?
We tend to think that the personal income tax is the best, certainly, because it can be tailored to ability to pay, and because when you do raise taxes on higher income people, it doesn't hurt the economy quite as much as it does when you raise the sales tax or when you cut spending. So that certainly is the case. There also are a lot of things that need to be fixed in the way of business taxation, which is in many cases largely avoided, depending on how the state is structured.
Yeah, but then to take the other side, if we raise business taxes, do the taxes move either to another state or do they move out of America?
Taxes are a rather small part of the cost of doing business for most corporations, certainly. And the studies do not suggest, or they're certainly all over the map, on whether higher business taxes affect business location, because there's so many other factors ranging from labor costs to proximity to other mm-hmm. businesses and markets and so forth and so on that play a role. So, and if you cut your spending on highways and don't maintain them, or if you cut your spending on education and mm-hmm. The businesses don't have educated employees, that has a major effect as well.
What is it about the water in Oregon, Iris? What did they get wrong out there?
Well, Oregon, like California, has to some degree tied itself in knots with initiatives, which they love to pass in that state. But they did manage to pass their budget, and they did so, you know, in quite a reasonable way. So this time.
So they're acting relatively responsible given the horrendous unemployment out there.
Yes.
Let's talk about the controversy. I want you to state this case. Should we raise taxes in a recession?
If a state has a major budget deficit, it is less harmful to the economy of the state to raise taxes than it is to cut spending. And that's particularly true if you're raising taxes on higher income people. So I think the answer is yes, that the budget cuts are not only very harmful to the individuals that rely on services, but they take demand out of the economy. So I think the answer is yes, and you do raise taxes in a recession because you have to, because states can't print money, because they have to balance their budgets, and 28 states have indeed chosen to raise their taxes this year.
Should the federal government have the state mandate where they can't print money?
Yes, we'd have a monetary policy disaster if states could print money, I think. The Federal Reserve has to control the money supply.
Well, what about going the other way? If we have all these states confronting at 4 a.m. like Delaware, would we have a better federal government, Iris Lav, if we said the U.S. budget has to be balanced?
You need flexibility. If you try to balance the federal budget, which is, of course, much larger, in a recession, you run the risk of having what happened in the Great Depression, where first Roosevelt stimulated the economy and it was starting to get better, and then everybody got worried and they balanced the budget, and the economy sunk down back down into a depression it didn't come out of until World War II. So the federal government needs to deficit spend in a recession, and what it's done here is provide about $140 billion to the states so that to help them balance their budgets, which seemed like a lot of money at the time it was enacted, although mm-hmm. the state deficits have certainly overrun that amount, the falling revenues. So the federal government needs the ability to do that. I think if the federal government hadn't taken all the actions it has taken this year with respect to banks and with respect to some corporations and with respect to the states, that we would be in a much larger economic mess right now. The recession would be much deeper, and it was able to do that because it can deficit spend.
Mm-hmm. When you come in the morning to the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities, give us three states that you like to look at first thing in the morning. Are there three states that deserve our attention right now? What would they be?
Oh, I think that right now I am watching California. I'm watching what happens in Illinois with a 33% deficit and a big political problem. And who else am I watching? Arizona, which is
really stuck. What's with Arizona?
Arizona's very stuck. They really, there's a problem. They don't really want to raise taxes, and if they raise taxes, the governor's idea was that they have a huge tax cut down the mm-hmm. road, or change to a different kind of income tax
right.
down the road, as a price for raising it now, which would have devastated seniors in the state, among other people.
Yeah. Well,
they're stuck, and they can't figure out what to do, so we're watching.
Iris Laff, thank you so much with the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities.
There's more television and radio news at Bloomberg.com. Stream it live. Download it to your iPod or desktop. Copyright Bloomberg LP 2009.